You're very welcome along. It's a Friday afternoon experiment here as we bring you NFL on OTB on a Friday afternoon for the first time ever. Sure, we'll see how it goes. Why not? Sam Monson's going to join us a little bit later on. He's from the American side of things, still with his turkey coma hangover. But here in Ireland, I'm delighted to say, we've got Cian Fahey with us. Cian, how you doing?
I think Martin O'Neill displaced us, did he?
Yeah, a little bit. There was a little bit of news this week that that got in the way of things. You're pretty much on an American schedule. Does that mean that you pig out on turkey and stuffing and all that nonsense as well?
I have managed to get the worst of both worlds, where I just have to work for 9 hours instead of getting the day off like they all do as a holiday in America. But we did pick a good week to do a Friday show because we got 3 games last night. We normally only get one, and they were kind of like, they might not have been that competitive, but they were kind of interesting games, I guess, at least.
Yeah, so stuff happened in the games, which I think is not a bad way of explaining it. A lot of people would have got bored in the middle of the second game. I say a lot of people, I kind of got a little bit like, okay, I've got to go to bed now, otherwise this morning show is going to be a bit of a disaster. So let's just recap. New Orleans did what you would expect and ended up winning 31-17 against the Falcons. Dallas beat Washington 31-23, and we'll talk about that because Amari Cooper, it turns out, ain't dead yet. And then Detroit got beaten by a Chicago team that didn't have Mitchell Trubisky playing. And I don't know, I think that there are probably pretty interesting lessons to learn here. Let's start with the Chicago game, right? So no Trubisky, and it didn't really matter in the end.
Yeah, it should have mattered. Chase Daniel played probably as well as Chase Daniel has ever played, in the sense that he didn't destroy himself and he didn't have an awful interception and he didn't collapse on himself completely. But you also did see his very clear limitations, where he missed a couple of throws he should have made. And there were two particular plays where he had wide receivers running wide open down the middle of the field for long touchdowns. And instead of releasing the ball, he ran himself into pressure and completely didn't see them. He didn't even attempt to throw in their direction. So the Bears' offense wasn't really the story. Allen Robinson made a couple of good plays. The design was fine. They threw the ball a little bit too much. It was notable they didn't really use Jordan Howard, when you think that's what they would have done because they're using their backup quarterback. But it was more about the defense, and that's kind of been the case all year. Khalil Mack didn't have a stat in the game until the third quarter or so, but he was impacting the game plan. The Lions came out, and the Lions are a quick passing team in general, but Matt Stafford was not holding the ball at all in this game. He was terrified of what Khalil Mack and those edge rushers would do and what Akeem Hicks would do. And it impacted their game plan and limited how much points they could put up. I think they had 7 points at the end of the half, maybe 10, might have been 10. Either way, it was a very low score for them. And in the second half, then, you had that one critical error that Matthew Stafford made that kind of blew the game open, where Eddie Jackson knew that Michael Robinson, when he lines up as a tight end with two receivers outside of him, he's more than likely running to the flat. So the Bears blitzed Matt Stafford. That forces Stafford to get rid of the ball quickly. Eddie Jackson, the deep safety, knows the ball is going to the flat to Robinson. So as soon as the ball is snapped, he sprints to that spot, beats the tight end to the spot, catches the ball, and is running into the end zone with relative ease. And Matthew Stafford looks like an idiot. The one thing you will say for Matthew Stafford is there were two dropped touchdowns in this game. One from the tight end Robinson again, and one from Kenny Golladay. Golladay got a bigger share of the targets because Marvin Jones is out and they already traded Golden Tate, and the other receivers didn't really step up because they weren't that good.
A couple of things struck me about this. One of the throws, it might have been the very last one, which is another interception. Stafford puts his hands up and you can kind of clearly say, you can see that he's kind of saying to the intended receiver, why the hell didn't you turn back and finish out what you're supposed to be doing, right? I'm sure very few people are aware of this, but a similar incident happened at the end of a 49ers game before the bye, where Akello Witherspoon throws his hands up because he doesn't get safety support over the top, and he got absolutely eaten alive by Richard Sherman and by Kyle Shanahan, who were like, oh, you've got to man up. We will deal with this in the changing rooms. Now, he's a second-year, not great corner, potentially could be decent in the future. Matthew Stafford is the franchise quarterback, but when he's doing it, is that okay? Because he's Matthew Stafford. Is it all right for the quarterback to be a petulant bit of an asshole?
That's probably the dynamics of the locker room. You probably get away with a lot more Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady. Those guys do a lot of that stuff where they're blaming other players, calling out other players. It's not necessarily the greatest thing to do. A guy like Aaron Rodgers doesn't call anyone out. He always takes the blame himself. I don't really look at it that way. What I kind of look at is who was actually wrong on the play. And Michael Robinson, who was the tight end, who was the target on that play, he doesn't actually run a defined route. So when you run upfield, you expect him to either break outside, continue running upfield, turn inside, turn around, or run to the corner, to the back pylon. He didn't really do any of those things. He just kind of went into the body of the defender and kind of started to drift. But the thing about it is, Matthew Stafford threw a pass to no route. He threw the ball to a spot where it didn't make any sense that the tight end was ever going to get the ball. He threw the ball to a spot where only the defensive back was going to get it. So he can blame the tight end and say he didn't run a good route, but there's no route that would explain the throw that Stafford ultimately made. So in that instance, you kind of, if you're Robinson and you turn around and if you look at the play afterwards and you can see him giving out to you, I don't necessarily think that's something you're going to be able to defend yourself as the quarterback, because it would be different if he put the ball outside of Robinson and thought, hey, you're supposed to break outside. He didn't. He threw the ball over his head, about 3 yards over his head, not to the back of the end zone, just into the middle of the end zone, which isn't a place where you normally run a route.
Every time a coach leaves the New England system, there is a queue of people desperate to beat down on them immediately, kind of saying, well, all you were was like this child of Belichick who actually never did anything for yourself. And it's been fairly similar with Matt Patricia from before the season started, when all the stories came out about the, oh, he's training us too hard, he's making us do too much work, I can't believe this guy doesn't respect us, we're veterans of the league. That was the one of the stories that came out. And then there's been all sorts of things afterwards. Maybe the stories are right in this case. I guess, I don't know. There's a bit of a stink on them at the moment.
Well, like none of us know the character of these guys, but his public appearance, his public profile at this point is a negative one, what you're talking about there before the season. But there was also the story of his domestic situation from 10 years ago or whatever it was that he apparently got away with. That's alleged stuff that we can't really get into in great detail because I obviously don't have the full details in my mind right now. But he also, a couple of weeks ago, came at a reporter out of nowhere saying, why are you slouching in your chair? Stand up and give me some respect in a press conference. And he made this big deal out of it, which is fine, except you're like a guy who doesn't dress all that well and has this big scraggly beard and you're not really showing up that kind of respect to them, I guess. But the problem for him has been you got blown out by Sam Darnold in his debut at home. You beat the Patriots and you beat the Panthers. Those are two very good wins. But then you've lost to Chase Daniel on a short week where the Bears had 80 hours between finishing their game against the Vikings and starting their game against the Lions while traveling in between that. So for Patricia, I don't know about all the personalities of him. Maybe that's a big part of it. But right now, his coaching is a major, major issue. And the problem for the Lions and the problem for him is the Lions always try and tie these guys to Stafford. Stafford has gone through, what, 3-4 head coaches, 6-7 offensive coordinators. The guy is just not good enough, and he has that big, talented arm, and everyone thinks he's a phenomenal talent. Like on the commentary last night, one of the statements was, actually it was Rob Ryan, I think, said Matthew Stafford is a superstar quarterback, one of the bona fide superstars in this league, because he's got one a great arm and because he went first overall. Those are the only two arguments for Stafford at this point. He doesn't make good decisions, he doesn't throw the ball accurately, and he has not been able to elevate anyone around him. So Matt Patricia with Matthew Stafford, you're not getting much confidence inspired there. Maybe the one argument is they don't have much defensive talent yet. In the secondary is a big issue. They have like one cornerback who's decent, and that's about it, Darius Slay. Outside of him, Glover Quinn is fine too, but he had that one stupid penalty yesterday as well, early in the game. So they're not really getting the best out of their stars, and they're not developing other players around them. So it's still early days. Maybe Patricia comes good, but none of the signs are good right now.
Okay, a brief word about Chicago before we move on. So they played last night without Trubisky, and it's clear Trubisky is a very interesting part of that and has really evolved this year from last year. It's also clear, too, that they have an offensive-minded coach who is really keen on trying to get that offense elevated to the same level and standard that we're seeing from New Orleans, from Kansas City, like, and understands how the league is going. But they also have one of the best defensive coordinators on the books, and they now have a collection of defensive talent that makes you think that they're a very well-balanced team. They're not going to shoot the lights out in the same way that Kansas City are or that New Orleans are, but there's a good chance that if you were to put them up against those teams in a one-off in the playoffs, like, it's not going to be a gimme for anybody.
Absolutely not. They are, like, you've got the three best teams in the league right now are the Saints, the Chiefs, and the Rams. That's absolutely certain. They're the three best teams in the league. But right after them is Chicago. And when you're right after someone like that in a one-off game, it's not like it's a seven-game series of basketball where the best team always comes out. In a one-off game, the Bears are close enough to beat any of those teams. The fascinating thing to me about the Bears is that Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator, is the best coach on that team. I know Matt Nagy is getting a lot of credit, but what Matt Nagy has done brilliantly opposed to John Fox is bring in a system from Andy Reid. He was Chiefs offensive coordinator last year. He's brought that system in, he's put that system in, and it's so much better than John Fox's system. But the offense hasn't really got better because of his play calling or because he's developed guys. Trubisky is actually less consistent this year than he was last year. His footwork has been a mess. His decision-making has been a mess. Part of that is moving into a new offense, obviously, in a different scheme where he's asked to do a lot more. But overall, he has not developed and taken a step forward. His numbers have jumped because they've added Allen Robinson. They've added Trey Burton. They've added Taylor Gabriel, who's been phenomenal. They've added all these offensive pieces. I don't think Matt Nagy is the catalyst for what they've done well on offense as much as they've changed the whole offense around the quarterback. And the scheme difference between the scheme has just been brilliant. But defensively, yeah, I want to focus on that because you did say that. When you look at the Rams, you've got some names there on the defensive line. You've got Aaron Donald, obviously phenomenal. You've got Marcus Peters, who's having an awful year, but is a big name. When you look at the defense of the Chiefs, you've got Justin Houston, D. Ford, Chris Jones, three phenomenal players on the defensive line. Kendall Fuller, is pretty good in the back end as well, but outside of that, they don't really have anything until Eric Berry comes back. When you look at the Saints, Saints have a good defense. They've got Cameron Jordan, they've got Marshawn Lattimore, they've got a bunch of guys who play to a level that's acceptable rather than the Chiefs and Rams, where you've got guys who can be picked on. The Bears are the only team out of those four who has a defense that in any way intimidates you in this NFL. This NFL is very different to the NFL of 5 or 10 years ago because defenses have been outlawed, basically. The Bears are kind of the one defense right now that isn't suffering at that as much. They're, because Khalil Mack dominates so much, because Akeem Hicks dominates so much, opposing offenses have to change how they approach games like the Lions did this week.
Okay, I want to move on and talk a little bit about the other two games. So Dallas beat Washington 31-23, and the offense stuttered a good bit early on, but eventually gets sparked to life because the Dak Prescott-Amari Cooper relationship is blossoming. And if it continues to blossom and develop at the level that it has done after, what, 3-4 weeks, then suddenly Dak Prescott's going to be putting up big numbers, and Amari Cooper is going to look like a really good trade.
Yeah, it helps your numbers when you have a wide receiver who can run 79 yards after the catch for a touchdown, I think. But I think he was overpaid, or the price they paid for him was too much. A first-round pick was too high. They probably could have got him for less, but they've got him now, so it doesn't really matter, sunk cost or whatever way you want to look at it. Amari has an unbelievable amount of talent, and you saw that last night on his route running. He converted 3 first downs in the first probably 4 drives. I mean, first downs on third down. And then he set up those touchdowns. The first touchdown was phenomenal, that route where he brings the cornerback outside, cuts back inside underneath him, and the cornerback falls down. He catches the ball and runs to the end zone. The second one is just as good, where he catches the ball over the middle and breaks away from the safeties and runs into the long touchdown. Amari has had a huge impact on this offense, but I've seen this thing that we're doing where...
Sorry, go on, Kian, yeah.
I've seen this thing where we're doing where we're pointing to Amari and we're looking at the split stats for Dak Prescott and saying... Amari's the difference in his offense. We did that with Ezekiel Elliott last year. We kind of oversimplified it when Ezekiel Elliott was out suspended, the passing game dropped off, and we said, oh, Zeke is the reason this passing game works. Zeke was there this year, the passing game wasn't working, so we changed it to Amari, and we're kind of just jumping from one to the other. The real difference here is Amari has come in, he's a legit number one receiver, he's playing that well, he's really, really good, but the offense has also changed philosophically because of him. They're actually spreading the field a little bit more. They're not relying on their big tight ends, blocking tight ends, to run routes for them. You're getting Michael Gallup on the field. You're getting Allen Hurns. You're getting more Cole Beasley. You're getting all these guys just to simply spread the defense out, create more space, let Prescott throw into windows that are wider, that are actually open, rather than expecting him to throw guys open all the time. And one of the big changes between Prescott and Carr, and this was something I touched on before the trade, Cooper has not had any drops since he's been to the Cowboys, not any drop issues. Big part of that. Prescott understands touch, understands timing, and understands how to place passes. Derek Carr would throw him the ball, and he would stress him at the catch point. He would force him to make more difficult, unnecessarily difficult catches. And it was actually his last attempt, his last target as a Raider. He got hurt because Carr threw the ball at his shins rather than to his chest, and people blame Cooper for stuff like that when that's not his fault.
So, Cooper is really good, and yes. Dak Prescott is actually quite good.
Yes.
Okay. And there's a bit of a Jenga piece thing going on here where Cooper looks sensational, scores the 2 touchdowns, and it was looking back at the video this morning, it was like, oh, a guy fell over. A guy fell over in that one as well. Geez, he was pretty lucky the guy fell over twice, and then you kind of go, the guys are falling over because your man's a genius. Like,
well, that first touchdown comes against the second cornerback on the Washington team. So you say, oh, it's not Josh Norman, so that's why he falls down. But if you go back to the very first third down, he runs exactly the same route on the other side of the field against Josh Norman, and Josh Norman is nowhere to be seen the same way. He's making these guys fall over. He's putting them off balance. He's so precise in what he's doing, and he's so quick doing it. It's so hard to keep up with him.
I mean, you think about the hot takes in the immediate aftermath of that, and it was like, whoa, well, hang on a second here. This could be a top 8 pick that they've just given away for this guy. There's no way. John Gruden just won this trade again. And now you're kind of going, geez, I don't know. He's going to have like the 31st pick for Khalil Mack this year, the 28th, 29th pick. It's like, is that really? I mean, okay, so you get another one next year, and who knows what that is, but it could be 26th.
Oh, but even if it was a top 10 pick, it wasn't really worth it anyway, because you're still banking on picking a guy as good as these guys you've given away. The thing about the Raiders' point of view and the Raiders' trade, like, the Cowboys, at the time, the Cowboys were on a downward trajectory, and they've won three in a row, and now they look like they're going to win the NFC East. Part of that is Washington losing Alex Smith, though, because it kind of felt like that game at least would have been close last night. It would have been competitive if they had better quarterback play in Washington. And for all you can say about Alex Smith, he's not going to turn the ball over the way Colt McCoy did twice. Those were two awful interceptions. And a little bit of a story that we've overlooked, kind of like, it's not like the Bears, but that Cowboys defense is definitely going in the right direction. Those linebackers are playing phenomenally well. They've got two of the best pass rushers in the league in DeMarcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory. And Chris Richard, who is a former Seattle Seahawks defensive coordinator and defensive backs coach, he's getting the best out of Byron Jones and Xavier Woods and everyone else in the back seven in the secondary.
Yeah, and their offensive line has improved to the point where Ezekiel Elliott is now impacting games in the way that we knew he was capable of but hadn't done for quite a while.
Actually, point in that we should touch on that I didn't get to is they were playing three backups last night. You did not have Tyron Smith at left tackle. They were playing Cameron Fleming, who is a former Patriots tackle, who is a much better backup than what they had last year. They're playing Xavier Suafilo at left guard, who was a former Texan second-round pick who busted previously, and they're playing Joe Looney at center. They were missing Tyron Smith and Travis Frederick. They only had Zach Martin out of all their stars, and they were missing their rookie starter at left guard. And that's a huge detail because 12 months ago, they went and played the Falcons, and everyone remembers this game because Dak got sacked probably 7 times when Tyron Smith went out, and it was the same thing over and over and over again. This year, they've changed their offensive line coach to Mark Colombo, doing a much better job getting individual performances better, but the play calling has also been better to the point that they're not just selling their quarterback out and saying, go up, drop back and avoid a free rusher all the time.
Do you make them favorites to get out of that division now?
I think they have to be. The Eagles have fallen off on offense, and defensively, they literally don't have a cornerback healthy this week who was on the roster 5 weeks ago.
Odell Beckham Jr. thinks the Giants are going to run the table, so we'll see. We'll see who's right. We should talk about the Saints. Got up and looked at the scores, 31-17, and then you're looking to see how many touchdowns did Michael Thomas get, and then you're, what about Traquan, and you're like, hang on a second, who the hell are these guys?
I quite love this, by the way, just because fantasy has become such a big thing that when people score touchdowns, you don't really just celebrate that it's a touchdown. They go and check who scored, and they always want it to be their guy. And last night you had Austin Carr, an undrafted receiver, Dan Arnold, an undrafted tight end, Keith Kirkwood, an undrafted receiver who's only playing because everyone else got hurt in front of him. And it wasn't even Traquan Smith, the other one. The other one went to, I can't even remember who it went to. They had four touchdowns last night, and none of them went to anybody you know. So it's a testament to Drew Brees, and it's a testament to Sean Payton's play designs, because there was one play early in that game, and I wrote this up on the Patreon, and there was one play early in this game where Drew Brees lines up under center, and he pump fakes to his left, and Ben Watson is moving out to his left, and that moves the linebacker who's covering him out wide and opens up a running lane for Ben Watson to run right down the middle of the field. And Brees, while Ben Watson is in the early stages of his route, turns around, holds the deep safety to the right side of the field, comes back and hits Ben Watson. He's wide open. Ben Watson is not one of these unknown guys, but he's not one of the stars either. And he's come wide open because of Sean Payton's play design and Drew Brees' technical ability. And that's kind of just sums up the Saints' offense. They've got the stars in Alvin Kamara. Alvin Kamara was great last night. And Mark Ingram and Michael Thomas. But when they've got to elevate these other guys and turn to these other guys, Brees and Payton are just as good as anyone else in the league at getting the most production out of what they've got available.
The Falcons are having the season that we thought they might have when the injuries hit them very early on. It's like, this is a really good team, but then a core of their defense disappeared from the entire year, and it's impossible, it turns out, to have any kind of chance when your best players are out.
Yeah, the Falcons defense was kind of getting cut apart early. Alvin Kamara in particular was running right up the middle, and he was gaining at least 9 yards every time he touched the ball. But they can kind of come after this game last night and say, the offense didn't pull its weight. We held them to 31 points. We got an interception on Brees, only the second one this year. And you guys messed up. Like, on the opening drive, or their first drive of the game at least, the Falcons got to the goal line. Matt Ryan dropped back on a package play, turned around and looked for a slant route to Julio Jones. Cameron Jordan read it, so he stood up right in front of Julio Jones, forced Matt Ryan to hold onto the ball. And Marcus Williams, the safety, jumped through the middle and punched it out of his hands. Saints recovered a fumble. Take over, don't even get a field goal out of that drive. End of the second half, or end of the second quarter, you're driving. Matt Ryan hits Julio Jones over the middle. At this stage, it's 17-3. Julio Jones is running, and he does this thing where he jumps one tackler going low, and then he gets hit by another guy. And it's a bit like Willie Beeman. It's a bit like something you would see in an Adam Sandler film, where it looks nothing like an actual football play, but it becomes this highlight where he's spinning through the air about 5 feet off the ground. And he fumbles, and the Saints take that over, and that's another empty drive. So they go into the half at 17-3 rather than 17-10 getting the ball back to start the third quarter. So I feel like the Falcons defense is the weak link, but last night, or yesterday at least, you probably can't blame just the defense. You say that offense didn't pull its weight and it should have done better.
Okay. Drew Brees now the MVP front runner after what happened in all the other games at this point?
I think it's a fascinating argument. It's a fascinating discussion. I don't think either guy is should be deemed out of it. I think Andrew Luck is not getting talked about at all. He should be talked about. He has thrown at least 3 touchdowns in the last 8 games or whatever it is. And Patrick Mahomes, to me, is still the better option, but their guys are right next to each other. It's neck and neck. My argument for Mahomes is he has a more difficult situation, even though neither of these guys have difficult situations. But he's made more difficult plays. What Brees is doing is making the more routine plays more consistently and just taking advantage of being in a great offense behind a great offensive line with great weapons. But I'm not going to argue against any of these guys. You can pick whoever you want. It's about what you prefer and what you personally prefer as a style.
Final one for now. Ronnie Fields on Facebook Live says, Bradshaw built a dynasty in Pittsburgh. Montana built one in San Fran. Brady has one in New York. Mark my words, Sean McVay and Jared Goff are going to build one in Los Angeles. Rams for the Super Bowl. They've got a long couple of seasons now where he is still on his rookie contract and they can continue to buy the best available defensive talent or offensive talent if they need it for the next couple of years.
Yeah, well, I think that extension will probably come after this season, but it won't kick in for another year or two after. They have the option to, though, so maybe I'm wrong on that. They might push it off a bit. Look, I love Sean McVay's offense. I love their supporting cast. I love Todd Gurley is phenomenal. I still don't love this quarterback. This is the state of the NFL right now. You could score 54 points and your quarterback could play poorly. He had a bad game Monday night. I know he had big numbers. If you go back through that game, he had about 15 throws that he didn't make that he should have made, where his receivers are wide open. But that's the benefit of that offense. If you run play action in that offense, he comes into a wide open clean pocket and he's got two receivers running wide open down the middle of the field and it's got nobody covering him. So it's the option is you either miss a simple throw or you have a big completion for a big game. So the quarterback there is still questionable for me. Once Andrew Whitworth comes out of that offensive line, once you kind of have to pay everyone involved, although I think they've got most guys under contract. So really, it's only going to be Whitworth who they lose. I think they will be one of the better teams. I don't think they're going to be Brady and Belichick Redux. I don't think they're going to be the next big dynasty. I think they're one of the best teams in the league, but that's what they are right now. I don't think that's guaranteed to weed away for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Fair enough. Good stuff, Cian. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Matt.
Cian Fahey with us, as he is every week here on the NFL show here on OTB. We can run you through the fixtures and the results from last week. We'll have a look at those before we get to Sam Monson. And which one are we going to start with? We're going to start with last week's. Yeah, perfect. So the Seahawks beat the Packers 27-24. Seahawks actually not bad at the moment and still hanging around. Still have Danger Russ as their QB. Packers this week have a big game and still have an outside chance that they would pretty much have to run the table to make the playoffs. Not impossible, but you kind of also get the sense that maybe Aaron Rodgers wants to put the stink on his coach and get rid of him in the offseason. So the Ravens beat the Bengals, despite the fact that the Bengals had Hugh Jackson on the sidelines for that one. I mean, who could have seen that coming? This is the Cowboys beating the Falcons last week. We've obviously talked about the Cowboys winning yesterday. The Giants beat the Bucks 38-35 in an instant classic, or maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was just two bad teams scoring loads of points. The Steelers and the Jags, that was a pretty interesting game because I think that's the one that's going to make the Steelers fans believe that this is a team of destiny, and certainly they can talk that shit to themselves and believe it now. The whole Le'Veon Bell situation was resolved last week. The Jags came out, kind of tore into them in the first three quarters, and still at the very end, Big Ben lumbering over to score a touchdown with a second left on the clock to win that game. Texans beat the Redskins. That's back-to-back defeats for the Redskins. That game, more important really, for the horrific injury to Alex Smith that may well derail their entire season. The Colts, we didn't talk about the Colts there, but Andrew Luck is absolutely sensational. Back fully fit and tearing defenses apart, annihilating the Titans 38-10, and that's a big win from them. From a divisional perspective, the Lions beating the Panthers. How the hell did that happen? How did that happen? Cam Newton, we all bet on you, and more fool us. What the hell happened? That's all I'm going to say about that. The Broncos beat the Chargers 23-22. Again, the Chargers charging a little bit. The Raiders beating the Cardinals and doing themselves no favour when it comes to the first pick in the draft. Derek Carr says they don't want the first pick in the draft. I think John Gruden is probably going to have a quiet word as time progresses. The Saints blew out the Eagles 48-7 and obviously have won again last night since. And the Bears beat the Vikings 25-20 to give themselves a clear lead in that division before we get to Monday night's game, which was 54-51, the highest scoring game. First time ever the two teams have both scored 50 points. Not the highest scoring game. There's one in the 60s where the Giants beat the Redskins 70-something. So these are the fixtures. The three are already done that we've talked about. The Bengals are... It's Browns at Bengals, so it is Hugh Jackson on the sideline against the Browns. I think the Browns might kill them. The 49ers are the Buccaneers. That's another opportunity for the 49ers to stink the place out and maybe get the first pick. The Jags, the Bills, the Raiders at the Ravens, the Seahawks at the Panthers, the Pats at the Jets. It's going to be interesting to see if they can go into New York and beat down on this terrible Jets team. But we'll see, because sometimes they don't do that in New York. And then it's the Giants at the Eagles. The late kickoffs, 4:05, it's the Cardinals at the Chargers, not worth watching. The Dolphins at the Colts. Steelers at the Broncos, the 4:25 game here in Ireland. And the Packers at the Vikings is the late kickoff before Monday Night Football is going to be the Titans at the Texans. Sam Monson is on the line. Sam, how you doing?
Doing good, Jer. How about you?
Are you stuffed from the turkey? What is the Thanksgiving like for an Irish person going over and embracing, you know, something different?
Well, this is the first Thanksgiving in probably 10 years that I haven't actually been working. So over the past couple of years at PFF, I've kind of transitioned a little bit away from the data collection side of things, more onto the front-facing or consumer side of things. So this is the first time that I haven't been actually doing one of the Thanksgiving games. So it's kind of nice. Kind of nice to have a day of not being working mid-season.
Yeah, and just everybody sitting around watching football, drinking beers. Sounds good.
Yeah, pretty much. It sounds like, say, you know, I hadn't been overwhelmed by the Thanksgiving as a holiday in the past. But then when you kind of distill it, for most people, it's just chilling around, a lot of food, beer, football. It's great. It's just that normally I'd been actually working during it, so it kind of sucked. But for the first time experiencing it the way it's supposed to be experienced, yeah, it's pretty good.
We didn't get too much into the 54-51 Monday Night Football game with Kian there. A few days on from it now, when the heat and the hype comes off it, what's your take on what it says about where the direction of the game is going? Is it a statement game for what the future of the NFL is going to be like, or is it a bit of a one-off?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the game that the NFL has been trying to create over the past several years with the rule changes and the re-emphasis of certain rules and basically everything they've been doing to protect quarterbacks, to make sure that everything is pass happy. And even in that game, we saw examples of, you know, supposedly if somebody is going to lower their helmet to initiate contact, it's a penalty regardless of which side of the ball they're on. But there was a play in that game where I think it was Gerald Everett of the Rams lowered his helmet, clocked a poor, oh no, it was a tight end for the Chiefs. Lowered his helmet, absolutely clocked Troy Hill of the Rams, who himself got flagged for lowering his head to initiate the contact. Like, it's even those rules are only being officiated on one side so that it's all offense all the time. And that was the game it's been designed to produce. Now, that game was a little bit of an anomaly because you're talking about probably the two best offensive systems in the game. You've got two great quarterbacks. You've got a lot of talent in terms of skill position players. You were missing a few players from defense. So it was like a perfect storm to create this high-octane arena league-style game of just endless points and chaos. But that's the game they've been trying to create. And I think, you know, we haven't seen games like that, but we've seen the Saints putting up points like it's not a problem either. There are a lot of teams that are at least capable of fulfilling their half of a game like that. It's rare to see two of them come together at once.
I've heard people this week saying that if you are sitting on a team as an owner with a coach who is defensive-minded, then you've got this whole thing wrong, that you're going completely the wrong direction. You need to get yourself one of these offensive masterminds, even if it's like an offensive coordinator or a quarterback's coach from college, somebody who is actually fully aware of exactly what the trends are and who can embrace that now before it's too late, because you're going to get left behind.
Well, at the very minimum, any team with a defensive-minded head coach needs to have an offensive-minded offensive coordinator that's good. You know, you can't just rely on defense shutting down these offenses anymore, because I just don't know that it's possible anymore. You might get it done one or two games in a season, but I don't know if it's possible now anymore to have a defense that is going to be dominant over the course of the year and ultimately shut down these teams when they get to the playoffs. So if you have, you know, say a Mike Zimmer on defense, a guy who can do that, you need to find an offensive coordinator that's capable of crafting an offense that's going to match these teams. And then the defense becomes the way you win. It becomes your differentiator because you're capable of getting a few stops and stealing a few drives over the course of the game, and his defense isn't. So I don't think having the guy in the top position is necessarily the wrong move, but it can't be at the exclusion of the offense.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about this earlier, which is all of a sudden why I think you've got to catapult Chicago up the standings slash, you know, talk about them as a realistic contender to win the whole thing, because they genuinely have the ability to stop even the super teams from running away with games, which is a situation they haven't found themselves in very often.
Yeah, I mean, Khalil Mack was the difference maker there. That defense has been moving in the right direction for a few years. Last season was big for them. They retained almost their entire secondary is hitting free agency at the same time. They kind of locked them all down. They kept them there. Obviously, they drafted Roquan Smith, a linebacker out of Georgia, in the first round. So the linebacker group was getting better. The defensive front was getting better as well. But Khalil Mack is the guy that kind of catapults that forward a year or two in terms of development, because he's a guy that can take over games on his own. And, you know, this season he hasn't just been getting sacks and hasn't just been getting pressure. He's been getting strip sacks and he's been forcing fumbles and he's been getting legitimate game-changing plays on a regular basis. You know, he's played two games kind of banged up, and you can see the dip in PFF grade, but also those are two of the three games that he hasn't had a sack this season. They're two of the four games that he hasn't had a forced fumble as well. So Khalil Mack has completely transformed that defense. But then the key is, on the offensive side of the ball, you have this scheme, you have the same system that's come out of Kansas City, this Matt Nagy system, bringing it with him. It's the same system that's in Philadelphia as well. And you have an offensive system that's capable of scoring points as well. I think one of the best things for the Chicago Bears this season is that Mitchell Trubisky hasn't been playing particularly well. His passer rating and his box score stats look great, but he's been the benefit of a lot of luck when it comes to turnover-worthy plays not resulting in turnovers. He's, I think, got the best drop rate of any quarterback in the NFL. His receivers basically haven't dropped the ball almost at all this season. So he's been playing a lot worse than his statistics suggest, which I actually think is a good thing for them, because if he starts to play better down the line, there's more to come from this offense than we've seen so far. And what we've seen has been pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd say if you're a Chicago fan, you must be feeling pretty good about life. I did want to talk about Andrew Luck and the recovery. There was a period where we thought that maybe Andrew Luck was finished, that actually the injuries had become so chronic, the information coming out, it was kind of like the Irish rugby team, you just weren't sure about what was actually happening. And lo and behold, here he is back. A bit of a slow start, certainly in terms of the wins for the team, in fairness. And it's a new head coach and a new regime, so probably to be expected. But they definitely have a sense of momentum. There's wind in their sails. And all of it, really, is on the shoulders of Andrew Luck, who is absolutely one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, and he's reinforcing that this year. And I think what we're seeing again is this great marriage of a really talented quarterback with an impressive offensive scheme, you know, a system that knows how to get the most out of him. And for years, their system was basically, Andrew Luck is so good, we'll just have him drop back, we'll give him seven-step drops, we'll just have him find an open guy. And their offensive line was terrible. It was just a recipe for getting him killed. And they've in the past, they've had to briefly go into this quick passing game before to try and protect him. When he was banged up a bit and the offensive line was horrendous, they ran this quick system for a couple of weeks, and he actually looked really good in it. And that's kind of what their entire system is this year. It's they've got rid of these seven-step drops. They get the ball out of his hands very quickly. I think he has the second fastest average time to throw in the entire league this season. And because of that, we're starting to see that actually Andrew Luck may be best suited in this quick system. You know, after all, this is a guy that was a smart quarterback, independent of going to Stanford. So he's a smart guy as well as being a smart quarterback. So he should be best suited for this scheme that lets him read defenses quickly, gets the ball out of his hands fast, and just lets him play like a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning. And that's what we're seeing now. And it's giving him you know, maybe the best season of his career.
I did also want to get your take on Tom Brady. You might have been a few years early, but you might have been right, right?
Well, I mean, he's going to decline at some point, right? I think he was declining at the point I said it, and the amazing thing is he managed to reverse it. Now, that in and of itself is pretty incredible given the age he did that in, but there's no way of hiding that. He did get dramatically better. I think the best seasons of his career all came after that point where he was written off. And that in and of itself is legacy defining. There aren't really quarterbacks that are able to do that. Peyton Manning did it for 1 year, then the wheels fell off. Drew Brees is kind of doing it now, which is incredible. But Brady became the best quarterback in the league unquestionably for a 2 or 3 season stretch after everybody wrote him off. Now he's playing a little bit worse, but he's been dealing, you know, with a lot of injuries. Gronk goes down. He doesn't have this fantastic slate of weapons that he's had for a lot of his time there. And the key people in that offense have been going down regularly, whether it's Gronkowski, whether it's missing Edelman to start this season. I think it's a little bit too soon to write him off, though maybe I'm a little bit snake bitten from doing that already. But it happens to everybody, right? At some point, Father Time comes up and kicks your ass and you're done. And usually when you're the older you get, the quicker it happens. These guys hit a wall very quickly. Peyton Manning, Brett Favre, again, the best season of his career arguably was 2009. And in 2010, he was done. It just happened immediately. So I guess it remained to be seen, I guess, down the stretch what Tom Brady looks like.
The bye week came at a really interesting time for them because they're 7-3, but they just don't feel like a 7-3 team. And the three defeats were all double-digit defeats on the road. So they need to be at home the whole way through the playoffs if they're going to, you'd feel anyway, to make it to the Super Bowl. And that's just not going to happen at this point. It just doesn't look like they're going to be able to put that run together to get a one seed. So, I mean, Belichick's clearly a genius, but can he hide Tom Brady not being the best quarterback and not making a relatively mediocre cast of weapons so good that they can somehow chisel this together? Like, they don't feel like Super Bowl contenders at the moment, I guess, is the short right way of me blabbering through this.
Yeah, I guess the thing that stands in their stead is that the Patriots have always been excellent at not having systems. You know, they don't have this rigid system that functions week to week, but they are amazing game planners. And that may be more important than anything when you get to the postseason and what you're dealing with is a series of one-off games that you need to win. And they are able to change up in what they do entirely on defense or on offense to suit the game that they're going up against. So they may be uniquely qualified at taking down one of these teams that does look to be dramatically better than them. So the Chiefs, there aren't many teams out there that can realistically hope to match up with the Chiefs and come away with a win. But the Patriots, with a one-off game to try and confuse Patrick Mahomes, to try and force some mistakes, some turnovers, some errant passes, they're probably better suited to doing that than anybody else. It's just giving them something they're not expecting. So I think they will be, for the first time in a long time, rolling into the postseason, definitely not the best team there in the AFC and probably not amongst the best two teams in the AFC. But if there's any team that can overcome that by executing a game plan that a team doesn't see coming going into a week, I think it's the Patriots.
Everybody always talks about how from Thanksgiving on, every single game is season defining if you're on the wrong side of, if your record isn't great. And it kind of is the case at the moment for the Packers. They're 4-5. The Vikings are 5-4. Do you buy that conspiracy theory about Aaron Rodgers not being too pushed about if this season doesn't go the right way because maybe finally they get rid of the head coach and he gets paired with somebody who appreciates the fact that you're dealing with one of the greatest players that the game has ever seen?
Not really. I think it's too soon for that to be the case. You know, I think if you're Aaron Rodgers, you maybe start thinking that way when the season has gone so bad that you're completely out of it. I think as long as they still have a shot at the postseason, Rodgers, as much as anybody, knows that those just don't come along that often. And, you know, for a guy that will want to find a way of winning at least one more Super Bowl championship before his career is over, from a legacy standpoint, you don't pass up an opportunity of getting that done, even if it's an extremely small opportunity and a long shot to get that done. If they can make the postseason this year, Rodgers will jump all over that, regardless of the fact that it's with Mike McCarthy and that offense, and it means he's kind of stuck with him going forward.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they'll do a Tennessee and sack the coach even if they reach the playoffs. You kind of feel like we're reaching some sort of conclusion on that. Very good. Anything else that we need to be talking about this weekend? The battle for the first pick is raging. The San Francisco 49ers now in pole position for it. If you are in a secure situation like Kyle Shanahan is, you just go to the owner and say, we're tanking, we're not going to do it officially, we're not going to tell anybody, but we want the first pick because if we get it, it's actually unbelievably valuable.
Yeah, it's interesting. Everybody always talks about tanking in the NFL, and it doesn't really happen, at least from a game to game. Like the NBA, tanking is like an institution. People do it, you completely bail on it, and you go targeting that first round or that top draft pick. In the NFL, it doesn't really happen, at least from a sort of head coaching level down. If tanking takes place, it's in the John Gruden way of doing it, which is you just ship everything off from your team to the point where you've basically tanked before the season even began. And the way the results work their way out is the way the results work their way out. But teams just don't shut it down midseason and, you know, roll out the backups and essentially intentionally throw away games to secure that number one overall pick. And I don't know that that's the right way of doing it. I think there are seasons where it's definitely a benefit if they did actually do that. But I don't know whether it's fear of the media or fan backlash or because there's only 16 games in a season and you just don't, you know, whatever the reason, teams just don't go out there and intentionally throw games. And I think there's not that much the 49ers could do to intentionally throw games because, you know, they've already got Nick Mullins out there as their starting quarterback. Beyond signing a guy off the street tomorrow and just throwing him out there, there's very limited ways you could find to be worse on paper at that position, which is obviously the easiest way of tanking. So, but yeah, I don't think they're going to do that, but they'll be in the running anyway, simply because of the situation they're in.
Yeah, it's just mad that the Raiders go out and win a game last week out of nowhere. You're thinking somebody somewhere didn't seem to get the memo.
Well, not just that, but they basically had lost that game. I mean, the Cardinals had a touchdown on the board that got taken off because of a holding penalty 10 yards downfield on David Johnson's run. That essentially iced the game. Then they somehow conspired to throw it away from that point, which involved, you know, dumping that drive, then the Raiders coming down and scoring themselves. Like, a lot needed to happen for the Raiders to execute that win. So, yeah, it's teams every single year seem to go out of their way to screw their own draft status up, which is kind of amazing.
Sam, good stuff. Thanks for joining us and happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, thanks, Jared. Take it easy.
Sam Munson from PFF there. You can get him at PFF_Sam. Now, Sue is here. Coming off not a bad week. Two picks?
Two out of three, yeah.
Two out of three.
11 out of 13 altogether.
That's not bad.
That's pretty good.
It's bloody brilliant. I had 5 picks last week, 4 lost.
You wouldn't trust me, though. Did you pick any of those I picked?
I was using Mike Lombardi's.
Oh yeah. Oh no, I thought you were going to say the secret group that you're a part of.
No,
I'm not part of.
I don't have a secret NFL group.
The Panthers, yeah, screwed me up last week. But anyway, this week is so hard.
Who were your two picks? Sorry.
Last week.
Yeah.
Panthers, Steelers, and Saints.
Okay. Well, the Steelers is a complete fluke. The Saints, I'm going to give you because they
absolutely
killed the
Eagles. And but it was great games to bet on to watch.
Yeah.
But I don't know what happened with the Panthers. Like, I don't know why you go for two at that crucial moment in the game. But anyway, the three ones I've picked for this week, actually, it's really hard. There's a lot of games that I just wouldn't go anywhere near this week. I wouldn't go near the Jags. I wouldn't go near the Patriots. Some of the spreads are massive. The Chargers one is minus 13. That's just crazy. I think I'm probably going to go for the Eagles at home, minus 6.
The Eagles, after last week, where they laid a big turd in the bed and then fell asleep in it and then woke up and they're all covered in their own turd.
Still think they'll beat the Giants and they're at home.
I don't. Okay.
This is the problem. These are the three picks I'm going to pick, right?
I'm not
convinced on the Colts for this week. The Dolphins are plus 7.5. I think that's too big a spread for that game. So I'm going to take the Dolphins plus 7.5.
Okay. No? There's a chance Ryan Tannehill's coming back. Hasn't been confirmed yet. He is shit.
Yeah, but they're off a bye week and the Colts are just so unpredictable some weeks. Like, Luck is great and I think he's been doing really, really well, consistently well over the season, and they've got better and better every week. But I think that spread is going to be too big for them.
I don't know. I would definitely be on the other side of that. I would definitely think that there's a chance. Look, I don't think the Dolphins are well coached. I don't think they've got any talent left. I think this is another lost season for them. But yeah. I think the Colts are charging and like could rack up a score. And it's a home game and all those reasons. I would definitely be...
You go for the Colts?
I'd be taking the Colts in that one. And with the Eagles, like... They're a game ahead of the Giants, and they're not out. So fair enough, they're not out. But I don't know. The Giants are putting up points.
I think the Eagles have something to prove as well, though.
They
and
do,
I don't
definitely.
Think they're a bad team. Okay, they have a couple of injuries and stuff like that. That's not actually serving them that well. But I don't know. Like the Giants have these great running backs and great receivers, but are they going to be as good as the Eagles at home? I don't think so. That's a big spread even for that, though. Like the rest of the games are just crazy as well. Like the Seahawks and the Panthers wouldn't touch it. The Packers and Vikings wouldn't go near it. Titans and Texans wouldn't go near it. Wouldn't go near the Browns and the Bengals.
Oh, what are the Browns?
The Browns are plus three.
And Tim, taking points from the Browns.
No.
Yeah. The Bengals are dead, and they've got Hugh Jackson on the sideline accidentally.
I love the way he popped up last week. I was like, how did you get a job?
Helping the Browns.
Anyone can get a job if Hugh Jackson can get a job. And my last pick is the Steelers at minus three on the road at the Broncos. Because the Steelers, I've consistently bet on them every single week and they've come through on every single time I've bet, including last week where I thought it was going to fall apart.
They're covering every spread?
Every spread.
All right, okay. Yeah. So you gotta ride the Steelers if that's what's happening.
Yeah.
It is a really difficult week.
It's a really difficult week. Like, that's the best I could come up with out of those. Like, I don't know about the others. 49ers? Buccaneers? No. Like, Fitzpatrick is just so all over the place.
He's
I don't think
playing.
The Cardinals are...
They pulled him. It's gonna
is
be,
it back to Winston?
Yeah, it's come back to Jameis.
He was actually quite good in the end last week as well, I thought. But the Packers, again, you just can't predict them. The Vikings haven't been as great as everyone thought they were going to be.
No, they haven't.
And
that's a divisional game. I would take points in divisional games generally.
I don't know. I think the Packers are going to win that, funny enough, but plus 3.5. It's just a bad week.
I'd probably take the 13 points that the Cardinals are getting at the Chargers as well. Like, the Chargers might be in their swoon. This could be the time to get them.
Maybe. Actually, maybe that's not the worst bet ever, yeah. I don't know.
Anyway, so your three picks, just to reiterate, because we've gone through every game and talked a lot of shit about them.
But it was a hard week.
So your three picks are the Steelers plus 3.5. So the Steelers minus 3.5.
Steelers minus 3.
Minus 3.
On the road at the Broncos. The Dolphins at 7.5 on the road at the Colts. And the Eagles at home to the Giants.
Okay.
And you're definitely going to lose money this week.
Well, I've gone against you on two of them, so somebody out there... is going to lose or win.
5 out of 5 one week.
Well, that's
Come
pretty
on,
good.
Like.
Yeah, you've got credit in the bank, unlike the rest of us. Sue, thanks very much. Enjoy week 12, whatever part of it is left for you watching it. And thanks very much for joining us here. You can subscribe to the podcast on wherever it is that you get your podcasts, whether that's on offtheball.com or that is on the podcast app on Apple, which is just called the Apple Podcast app, apparently, as opposed to iTunes, which is what we all used to call it because, you know, we're old. Good luck.